You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate, typically with Lisette and Jim. Today, I'm running solo for today's show. Today's show's on empathy. Empathy in couple relationships or in relationships between people. I wanted to start off by talking about a couple of people out there that are well known that may have a little bit lower level of empathy to understand what empathy is about. Typically, we associate people with low empathy as being narcissistic or psychopathic or sociopaths, that they have more interest in their own feelings, their own accomplishments, than the emotions of others. In fact, we may see them as cold and calculating and having no feeling. These things don't go well in a relationship. So we want to kind of give you an idea of low empathy people, who they are, high empathy people, and then look at empathy in relationship. Let's talk about somebody who's been in the news quite recently, which is Jeffrey Epstein. He's been known to be very low empathy, especially with what he had done with child sex trafficking, with taking advantage of not only the vulnerable, but the underage. That he had no remorse, no feelings. It was all to satisfy his own craving, whatever that was. And we'll not get into the conspiracy and everything that goes beyond it and the lack of list or the list that's being hidden, whatever the case may be. This is not a show about that. The show's about people like Jeffrey Epstein that we're going to discuss at the beginning here who didn't have any empathy. Another person like him was Harvey Weinstein, the way he used his position of power to take advantage of women who were seeking to be in movies, to be maybe in TV shows, to be associated with Hollywood and gain his approval. And he used that. And he was known as being what? Coercive, domineering. He had over 80 women accuse him of sexual assault or harassment. He used his legacy, his name in Hollywood, to gain power. And empathy would be having some feeling for the emotions of others. And frankly, it was quite obvious that he didn't. These are people with low empathy. Another, Lance Armstrong, a little bit different. We talked a few weeks ago about athletes and how athletes on teams develop an ability to work with the other people on their team, like a soccer team or football team. Many of the team players, those who are truly team players, they interact with others, they communicate with others, they work well with others, and then they learn wins and losses, and they learn how to work with others and gain that empathy. How are the others feeling? How are they doing today? How can I help the other player? These are empathetic players. These are players who show empathy. On the other hand, individual athletes like Lance Armstrong are sometimes seen as narcissistic. In fact, he was seen as vindictive as well. He was all about winning, and we put him on a platform. When he won, everybody was like, Lance, 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 highly supportive. But when it was found out that he was doing things like blood doping and other things just to win, and it was all about him, he was doing things not caring for other people. In fact, again, individual athletes who compete in individual events, meaning I compete against a bunch of other people and it's just about me. I either win or I don't, and it's not a team thing. They typically don't develop the same sense of connection with others as team players. That's why teams are very important at a young age. whether that's a team of athletes, a team of people who maybe are into acting and they help each other out on stage. They might be the crew that helps the actors, the crew that moves the stage stuff around, you know, the stage crew. They could be the people who build the set. But when you work together in a team for a common goal, you develop these types of skills in your youth. When you're focused on only your own success at the detriment of others, not caring about actually how they are, or if you're actually hurting them and not caring, that's the sign of a narcissist, a psychopath, or a sociopath. R. Kelly, the singer, who also was in a position of being famous, of people throwing themselves at him, and he was accused of taking advantage of multiple young ladies. He was, was he indicted? He was found guilty. Yeah, he was found guilty on multiple counts of sexual abuse, many involving underage girls. Again, caring about himself and not other people. Let's look at some other people. Oh, this is an interesting one. There was a woman by the name of Elizabeth Holmes. She was the CEO of Theranos. Theranos was a company that this woman founded, which was developing a way to test blood for all sorts of diseases. And she claimed that the machinery could take a single drop of blood and test for multiple things, diseases, other items that are in the blood, like high cholesterol, low cholesterol. So doing blood tests and disease testing from a single drop. She claimed she could do this, but it was almost all fabricated. She had fake results. She dropped out of school, convincing a lot of people of how successful she was and her company was. If anyone has seen the special, she'd drop her voice and talk like this when she was on TV. And she was charismatic. She spoke well. She presented well. And she convinced many people that her smoke and mirrors was actually real. She got millions and millions of dollars invested. In fact, I believe she was one of the first billionaires in this type of field. She was a young billionaire, and she was held very highly in newspapers, magazines, TVs, being interviewed, until it was found out that she was a fraud. Again, not caring about the investors losing money, not caring about giving false test reports to the people who went for testing using these machinery. These machines didn't work. How about O.J. Simpson? Well, we know him. We know what he was accused of, what he went to jail for, different things, but a lot of it was selfish, not really caring about the feeling of others. It was about him, his celebrity, and he seemed to be very likable, very charismatic. But at the same time, it was about his success and not the success or feeling of others. We have Kim Jong-un, North Korean leader, who also, he's put to death people in his own family members who didn't go along with him, not really caring, having no empathy. How about Roman Polanski, the film director who took advantage of young women again? Joe Exotic, and I had never followed him, but he was that guy who was a TV personality, who was the Tiger King. He was narcissistic, impulsive, reckless, did a lot of things for his own publicity hurting others without even worrying about it. Manipulated employees, convicted of attempting to hire a hitman, not thinking of the consequences of killing someone. This is crazy. And then there are others such as that. Now, that was painting a picture of those that we have seen and we see examples of in the news, on TV, everyday life, in the newspaper, specials that are made in YouTube on these type of people. And we get an idea of what having no empathy looks like. It's all about themselves. It's all about getting their way without caring about the emotions of others. That's an example of how not to be in a loving relationship, in a relationship with other people, or just as a human. On the other hand, we have some great examples of how to show empathy. And let's talk about a few of those people who show great deal or have shown a great deal of empathy. Number one is Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Now, this is an older show. For people my age, you'll recognize it right away. If not, go look on YouTube for old Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. The TV show was amazing. He was the most relaxed, down-to-earth guy, caring to ask questions about his guests, caring about kids, caring about nature, caring about just the environment, caring about everything. And he gave this wonderful warmth in discussion. He wanted to know how others were doing, how they felt, almost like how he could help. He made you feel welcomed just watching his show. Oprah Winfrey is also known as having a very good way with people. Inquisitive, helpful, supportive. She's started multiple charities. She's amplified stories of human trafficking, of other things where people have had challenges that she's been able to help with. Now, she's viewed as a cultural icon of emotional connection and empowerment. And I know there are good and bad stories associated with many people, but we're going to leave that alone for now. Let's go to Keanu Reeves. Now, he's known as like genuinely good guy, which is amazing for a Hollywood actor of his fame to be so outgoing and caring. There's a story about how he donated most of his Matrix earnings to the crew and has been filmed giving up seats to strangers and assisting people in distress. He is known as a genuinely nice guy. He shows signs of empathy. Jane Goodall, who was a primatologist, conservationist. She was very supportive of nature. She did a lot of the studies with the great apes and I believe gorillas. And she just had a lot of caring in the way she went about these things. She revolutionized how we viewed animals through a gentle, respectful research that she did with these different groups of animals. She was a symbol of scientific empathy. Being a scientist, studying animals, but treating them with empathy, which is even going beyond the human species. Princess Diana was known as highly empathetic. She was considered a royal humanitarian. She went around and helped different people. She was compassionate, brave, emotionally present. If you remember, she would hug AIDS patients back in the time of widespread fear and the stigma associated with that. She was doing outreach. She comforted people in war zones who were victims of landmines. She was remembered as the people's princess, and she was seen as a bright light in the royal family by those outside the royal family. And maybe she was seen as not being connected to the royal family as much as the royal family wanted her to be. And as we're not gonna get into that story, but she was a really person who gave warmth out in all of her conversations and connections. There are other people like Dolly Parton, who is very well known as a singer and a philanthropist. She has given money for $1 million for COVID vaccine research. She founded the Imagination Library to give free books to kids. She's admired for using her fame to uplift others. And finally, I'm going to leave it with Robin Williams, who would go around making people laugh. He'd give his time. He was not narcissistic. He liked being known, but I think he also had a lot of self-awareness that he was concerned that people saw him treating others fairly. He visited sick children. He comforted strangers. He supported mental health causes while struggling with his own pain, as we all know. He's remembered with balancing humor, with his heartfelt kindness. And when he made his way into movies, you saw his versatility, you saw his depth, you saw his ability to reach people. That kind of contrast between the narcissistic, psychopathic, sociopathic people and personalities without empathy, and the ones that we just talked about here, which are the ones that showed and still show, depending on who it is, wonderful signs of empathy, connection, and being able to be with people and feeling a warmth from them, not a distance. That is how we want our relationships to be with people, especially in loving relationships. But if we can feel better connected, communicate well, and work together from a standpoint of empathy, how do you feel? Let me understand your feelings so I can understand how I can better relate to you. And maybe I change the way I behave when I understand the impact my behavior has on you and your emotions. We come back, we're going to talk more about what we can learn now from couples therapy and the role that empathy has in its success.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. We're talking about empathy, those who are empathetic and those who aren't. Let's give an example of a relationship where empathy is a piece of it, and to see how two different characters that I think we may all be well aware of and know might handle a certain communication between them based upon having challenges. Now, I guess just a few years ago, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard were in the news. Married couple that had multiple issues. Johnny Depp was known for being private, introverted, and emotionally very sensitive, very quiet guy. He reported a history of childhood trauma as well as substance abuse. He was described by his ex-partners as kind, but prone to shutting down emotionally under stress. So not a good communicator, but very sensitive. Amber Heard, on the other hand, was outspoken, assertive, socially bold. She had a reported history of volatile and very romantic relationships. So they were volatile and romantic. Described as charming, but also reactive and emotionally intense. So kind of like we talked about some of the stars and personalities before who were very charismatic and could be charming and could be sensitive, so almost in a psychopathic, sociopathic way to get their way. So some people can act that way to control the situation. So there might be some emotional intelligence, but not used to help everyone, only to help themselves. So they may understand the emotions of others, but they use that to their own advantage. So let's talk about the empathy breakdown in their relationship. Neither partner showed consistent empathy for the other's emotional pain. And Lizette and I had a conversation before this show where she said, empathy is one thing. You may feel the emotion of the other person, but communication is really important. Like for me, I'm relatively sensitive, but I also had a large trouble communicating with a partner, especially when there was some kind of emotional stress in the relationship. I tended to shut down. So I understand Johnny Depp in a way. I'm not saying or comparing myself, but I can understand where sometimes emotionally sensitive people that may have a great deal of empathy may have a hard time communicating, especially with a partner that doesn't match their style, which is very important for us to match the style of our partner. Depp felt misunderstood and verbally attacked when he withdrew during conflict. And that was one of the reasons he did. And I remember part of the story is he'd hide in a bathroom. She'd throw stuff at him. There was retaliation. Both reacted defensively, trying to protect their own feelings instead of tuning into each other's needs as well as modes of communication. Maybe Amber liked confrontational communication and Johnny Depp liked non-confrontational and almost passive communication, or maybe no communication. Heard often accused Depp of being controlling and manipulative, and I would guess she probably accused him of being passive-aggressive, where she was active-aggressive. So Depp accused Heard of emotional abuse and staged aggression, that she would act out aggressively, even if she faked it, in order to try to get her way. So let's look at some low empathy conflict that they had. Depp locked himself in the bathroom during a fight. We just talked about that. Heard demanded he would come out of the bathroom and escalated the situation rather than calming it. And I think we might have even heard recordings of this. Depp asked for space. Heard allegedly mocked or challenged his need to retreat. If you heard some of the tapes, you could hear her egging him on and making fun of him. Neither showed understanding of the other's emotional regulation style. And that happens so many times with couples. Depp needed calm to recover. And we've talked about this in the past. If you can't have the communication now, you should have a predetermined understanding with your partner that let's take a quick break. Let's both calm down and come back when we can logically discuss the issue. And we talked about how the prefrontal cortex shuts down under anger, under emotional intensity. And we can't actually communicate about the problem, but all we start doing is ratcheting up the emotion. Heard needed engagement to feel secure. She wanted that challenge. And we talked about this with some people grow up in an environment where there needs to be the argument to feel like the person's connected to them. And if you don't care enough to argue, then you just don't care about the relationship. When one person's way of communicating is shutting down and the other is to argue, it's hard to have a sustained relationship. This mismatch of styles triggered a cycle of yelling, fleeing by Johnny Depp, and sometimes violence. Emotional fallout from this is the empathy failure created a toxic feedback loop. Pain by Depp, withdrawal, attack by Heard, and then more pain. This would go on and on. It became a wild court case that I guess overtook our minds and papers and social media for a couple of almost a year. So let's leave it there. But you can see that's like an extreme of two people who are extreme opposites being in a relationship where maybe when they first met, there was a connection based upon their status, their situation, or maybe one was trying to utilize the other for their own gain. For instance, an example, this is not what happened. This is maybe my take on it, is maybe Amber saw Johnny Depp as being an industry superstar and thought, good guy, nice guy, kind guy. And when they first met, interacted, when they didn't know each other, they had on their best faces. They had on their best emotional connection that they could have, and they got along. They got along, you know, going to maybe a party together, going to a restaurant together, doing things together when you don't know each other because you're both on your best behavior, each trying to get what they want out of the relationship. As the relationship develops and you become more of the person you really are, That's when everything fell apart. That's when Amber Style and Johnny Style clashed. I'm no expert on them at all. I just watched a little of the court case and read a little bit about them in the news. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk about partner empathy in relationship success, how empathy is used in couples therapy. Couples counseling uses empathy as a tactic, as a way, as a foundation of creating a situation that carries on the success of the relationship. To focus on empathy in the couples counseling is a way to get better outcomes.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette, who's not here today, and Jim. We're talking about partner empathy in relationship success. This is a paper that we're going to present that is practical insight from couple therapy. So it's using what people have learned through couple therapy, but not only what they learned, but what was done, what the most successful couples in couples therapy did to have success. And empathy is at its core. What is empathy? Well, it means understanding how someone feels and caring about their emotions. It's like stepping in their shoes for a minute and imagining their feelings and responding with kindness rather than reactivity. There are two main parts of empathy. One is cognitive empathy, which is understanding what the person is thinking, so cognitive. And the second is emotional empathy. It's understanding what the person is feeling once you understand them. It's also feeling the compassion or care towards them when you understand what they're thinking. So understand what they're thinking and then understand how you feel about that and also understand their emotional state. So empathy has a lot to do with emotional intelligence. Let's look at an example in a healthy relationship. Imagine if your partner says, "I feel like you don't listen to me." A response without empathy might be, "That's not true. I listen all the time." What did you say? But an empathetic response would be, or an empathic response, and I apologize, an empathic response would be, "I'm sorry you feel unheard. I didn't realize that, but now I understand. Let's talk on how I can do better." So sometimes it's being humble. Sometimes it's being less proud. Sometimes it's being less defensive. Maybe it's not sometimes. Maybe it's all the time being less defensive. But being less defensive allows you to be more vulnerable as well, as long as both of the people in that couple, in that relationship, are in a place of empathy, it does help. Here's a real life example. Maria comes home from work and tells John, "My boss embarrassed me in front of everyone." John responds, "That must have felt awful. Do you want to talk about it?" This shows empathy. He's tuning into her emotions and offering support. So support's another thing that couples do to help each other, and these are successful couples. The point being is John didn't come up with a solution right away. It was, "Hey, that must have felt awful. Do you want to talk about it?" It's not doing what typically guys do. You know, like I, you know, immediately I want to defend my wife. I want to like, oh, that was awful. Let's do this. And I'm going to call that guy and oh, you should have done this. Like we're, what is it called? Mansplaining? It's not really mansplaining, but it's like, you know, we got to come up with a solution. You know, it's like we hear this as the car's not working. I got to fix the car. No, it's somebody wants to tell you what's going on. How can empathy help in couple problems? Empathy can reduce fighting, build trust, and help both people feel safe. When empathy is missing, couples argue more. They feel distant, and they can even grow apart. Let's look at this. Let's look at another real-life example. Jake forgets their anniversary. His partner, Alyssa, says, "It hurt that you didn't remember. It made me feel unimportant." Jake could defend himself by saying, "I've been really busy. I have all this stuff going on at work. Oh, you know, I had to just take the car in. I'm really stressed out." All these excuses rather than listen to Alyssa. He could use empathy and say, "I can see how that made you feel invisible, that I forgot the anniversary. I'm sorry. You are important to me." And then work on how to make it up, how to reconnect. And that second response, rather than being defensive, taking responsibility for it, even though there are these extenuating circumstances that made this a difficult thing to do, like I forgot the anniversary because I was so busy and so stressed out, or, you know, there was this emergency at work, we had a fire, all these things can happen that, yes, that is true and that is a reason, but you're emotionally defending something where you got to realize your partner is sad or upset and you need to understand what they're thinking and how they may be feeling and then act with emotional intelligence. What does a healthy relationship mean? The studies that we looked at all talk about how couples end up with healthy relationship. What are things that make a relationship healthy? Well, number one, dyadic adjustment. What dyadic just means two people, dyad. It means how two people get along and solve problems together. Do they do it well? Do they not do it well? High dyadic adjustment means they've adjusted well to working together as a team. They cooperate, support each other, and handle stress as a team. They're not two individuals, but they're a team. A real life example of that is Sam wants to move to another city for a new job, but Taylor wants to stay near family. Instead of arguing, they sit down, they weigh the pros and cons, they look at it together. They make a plan that supports both of their goals. That's working things together. That is dyadic adjustment. Two people working as a team as one. Intimacy is another measure of healthy relationship. It's not just physical closeness, but it's emotional closeness. Intimacy means being honest, open, and feeling safe to share your real self. Again, it goes back to vulnerability. Being vulnerable is one thing, but being connected through the vulnerability, being and showing empathy is also. Nina, here's an example. Nina tells her husband, "I'm scared that you don't find me attractive anymore." He doesn't laugh it off. He holds her hand and says, "I do. Thank you for trusting me with that. Thank you for sharing that." Sometimes it's hard for people to say how they're feeling. They're scared of the other person's reaction. When we tone it down a notch, when we think and communicate, when we make an open communication that's non-reactive part of the relationship, the connection can grow. Another measure of a healthy relationship is trust. Trust means feeling secure that your partner cares for you and will not intentionally hurt you. For an example, Chris is going out with friends. Alex says, "Have fun," instead of constantly checking in. That trust keeps the relationship relaxed. Where are you now? Where are you now? When are you coming home? How are things going? I need to talk to you on the phone. I want to hear the sound behind you when you're talking to me. Are you at the bar? who are you with? That if you can't trust the person, then there's something else going on in the relationship. So there's actually now physical and sexual satisfaction. That's another measure of a relationship, a healthy relationship. This is about comfort, communication, and mutual enjoyment in the sexual part of the relationship. One partner says, "I wish we were more affectionate." The other doesn't brush it off. They say, "Let's talk about what feels good for both of us. What would you like to do? What would you like to, you know, try?" That is an important part of a well-adjusted and healthy relationship. And then finally, helpful partner support. That you're there not only to work together, but you're there to support each other, to support your partner in what they're trying to accomplish. Do you feel like your partner has your back when you need them? Helpful support means showing up for each other when it's important, listening, and being kind even when it gets hard. A real-life example of that is Ella gets bad news about a job interview. Instead of offering solutions, again, trying to solve it, her partner Sam says, "That must feel disappointing. I'm here if you want to vent or just need a hug." Again, talk about it rather than solve it. It sounds like something we probably always hear about relationships, and that sometimes it's the communication, not the solution, that's more important. So, in part of this, in talking about couples therapy as a way to learn on what couples should do so they don't need to get into therapy, or maybe help them avoid therapy by starting to live the way that a couples therapist would teach us, is understanding why people go to therapy. Number one, empathy. If they're lacking, that's a reason why people go to couples therapy. One partner says, "You never understand how stressed I am with the kids. You don't have empathy." The other says, "You're always complaining. You don't have empathy." This couple needs to help learn how to listen and respond with empathy. Empathy is very important, and this is what couples therapy does help with. For instance, after Lucy loses a baby during a medical procedure, she wants to talk about it, but Dan wants to avoid the topic. A therapist can help Dan understand that listening, even when it's hard, is an act of compassion, and maybe also help him understand that talking when it's difficult is so important for the relationship. And maybe when things get emotionally tough, that we have to learn to talk through that. And so many of us grow up not talking when things are emotionally tough. Learn to talk, learn to connect. Another why do people go to therapy is because of validation. They're looking for validation from their partner. Mark says, "I feel like I'm not a good dad." His wife could say, "Oh, don't be silly." Or she could say, "I see how hard you try. I believe in you." That second response validates his feelings, that he's trying hard and that she believes that he is. And that can help somebody who has misgivings or has they don't see themselves with a high level of confidence in something they're doing, is that support, that believing in the person. Validation also of the person's feelings. Why is empathy critical for long-term love? Wow. First of all, it allows us to be vulnerable. If our partner has empathy, it allows us to be vulnerable with them. If we have empathy, it allows our partner to be vulnerable with us. The point is that you can't have one thing and not the other. If you have empathy and the person isn't vulnerable and they shield themselves, it doesn't really help you. The thing that we talked about just a little bit ago is that Lizette talked about communication, is that you can have empathy and feel about somebody else and what they're thinking and how they're feeling, but if you can't communicate, the empathy to that person, then that also makes you feel, not you feel, it might make them feel that you're not connected. Even though you feel their emotion, if you're not communicating how you feel and showing the empathy, they may feel that you're disinterested in their feelings and that you're not part of the relationship. Number two, openness. For an example of openness in why it's critical for long-term love, Ben admits, sometimes I feel jealous of how close you are to your sister. Instead of getting defensive, his partner may say, thanks for telling me, let's talk about it. Open to communicating about something new. This is almost like the openness that's part of the psychological traits, the big five, openness to new experience. Well, this is openness to new ways of communicating. Oh, look at that. Number three, communication. During a disagreement, Alicia says, can we pause? I want to hear what you're trying to say. That moment of empathy changes the entire tone. Again, communication, you need to be able to communicate the empathy, not just feel it, but you need to be able to say it. You need to be able to have the connection. Safety is very important for long-term love. When Joe tells Grace about his past trauma, she listens without judgment. This emotional safety helps build their bond. It also allows the vulnerability to continue. Vulnerability is openness. A lot of these have a little bit of similarity between them. And then finally, when you're doing all this, what's very important for long-term loving relationship is bonding. After a difficult fight, two people admit their fears. I was scared you'd stop loving me. Me too. One says what their fear is. The other one acknowledges it. They have that connection. They have that bond. Empathy is part of bonding. Empathy is part of communication. Empathy is part of vulnerability. When you're vulnerable, the other person needs to have empathy, and you have to be able to communicate that. We come back. We're going to talk more about empathy in relationships.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. How do therapists use empathy in couple therapy? Let's go look at a real life example. A therapist tells Maria and Lewis, we're going to practice understanding each other, not solving everything right away, but really hearing. Again, don't try to solve the issue. Let's listen to each other and connect. To me, that's the hardest part. When I had therapy years ago, is actually being able to talk to the other person, especially when there's a lot of stress emotionally in the relationship. Here's another example. The therapist can teach a rule, a foundational aspect of therapy, which is no interrupting, listen to the other person. Reflect what you heard. So what I heard is, and this will make the space feel respectful and safe. Let's look at past examples of empathy. So maybe a couple started off in their relationship with empathy. Why not connect back to those? Lewis remembers how Maria once brought him soup when he was sick, even though they were fighting. This memory helps him reconnect with her care. Look for past examples of connection. Look at the good times. How about role play to learn empathy? The therapist has Lewis say, when you don't answer my texts, I feel ignored. Maria practices responding, I didn't realize it felt that way. I'll do better. And they can role play different situations. And it might not even be their situation. It could be different situations so they can start to feel comfortable with the statement and the response. Learn empathy and learn how to communicate with empathy. What is emotionally focused couple therapy? And this is where this whole show started from. EFCT, emotionally focused couple therapy. It uses vulnerability and empathy in emotionally focused couple therapy. A real life example would be like Lena says, I'm scared you'll leave me like my dad did. Well, her partner Jake replies, hey, Jake's with someone else now. Jake replies, I didn't know you felt that way. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And when he says that, he doesn't laugh. He's very serious. The main process of emotionally focused couple therapy is one partner will cry, I feel invisible. The other responds, you matter to me, and I want to show you more. That's how healing begins, with someone able to express their feelings, even if they're painful, and the other saying, I want to listen to you. The number one thing with therapy, and I've always said this, is that you need two people who want to work together, two people who want to have better communication, two people who want to show empathy, two people who want to be vulnerable in front of the other and want a safe environment and a respectful environment to do it. Therapy can be a training course in this. We're trying to bring some of that to you in today's show. What is taught in couples therapy? What we did is share with you a little bit about what happens in couples therapy, in emotionally centered or emotionally focused couples therapy, EFCT. Let's look at how to do this stuff at home when you're not at a therapist's office. Number one, use empathy in daily communication. Instead of saying, why are you so sensitive? Try, you seem upset, what's bothering you? And ratchet it down, ratchet the emotional content down to quiet, subdued, respectful, vulnerable communication. A little empathy goes a long way in communication. Number two, create a framework. It's almost like rules for the game, rules that are established between you and your partner. Julie and Devin agree, no talking over each other. And no blame. Don't blame. Listen, see how the other feels, and try to understand their feelings. During fights, they pause and ask, am I listening to you, or am I just trying to win? I need to hear you in order to say, you know what, maybe I am wrong. Don't be defensive, but be understanding. Show empathy. How to grow empathy in your relationship. Every night, Maya and Leo take turns asking, what was the one hard thing and one good thing today that we had to do? What was one hard thing and one good thing today? This habit helps them stay connected with empathy. So what we are trying to do is talk about maybe sometime during the day I shared something with my partner. And it was hard for me to do. And I let them know later in the evening, like, when I had to tell you this thing during the day, it was difficult for me. And the easy thing to do was, when you shared something with me, it was now much easier for me to listen to you and hear what you were saying and try to discuss how you were feeling rather than just trying to solve it right then and there without trying to be defensive. Key takeaways is that empathy starts with vulnerability, that therapists guide partners towards empathy. Often people don't know how to respond until they're taught how to respond. Empathy takes practice. Sometimes we are defensive. Sometimes we want to solve a situation rather than trying to have that soft moment of connection, especially in conflict. And finally, even partial empathy helps. saying, I hear you, it matters, even if you're still learning how to show it well. Hopefully we've learned something together today during today's show. I hope you were able to listen to what we had to share, and hope we see you again next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.